breaking.
Hello and welcome. Show number 6 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by NorCalSportsShop.com. What up? Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I'm glad you found us. In terms of finding us, there's several ways. One of the easiest ways is on iTunes, and most of you probably have found us there. But we're there, and you can run a search for podcasts. I think you can just do sports cards, and we should pop up. Otherwise, you can do like the Sports Card Show, and we should definitely pop up on iTunes and help us out and subscribe, and that'd be great. There's other ways. You can stream us from our website, NorCalSportsShop.com. That's not quite as updated because it does take a little bit of manual work on my end, and we all know that I'm not up for manual work most of the time, so that doesn't always get up right away, but that's another place to check us out. And there are other ways, and we'll discuss those as time goes on, but just wanted to fill you guys in maybe a little bit about, you know, what we're doing here. If you're just catching up, I mean, this is only our 6th show, so most of you are new listeners anyways. But as for a schedule, I'm not really sure. I'd like to do this at least once a week and maybe a little bit more, but, you know, I'm not set to a certain day yet because my schedule changes day to day. And so we're going to just kind of keep it open. But I would expect at least 4 shows a month and sometimes more. And sometimes maybe I'll do some like today. I recorded a show yesterday, and I'm going to pound this one out and hopefully have it out in the next day or so for you guys. So that's kind of what you can expect from me in the short term. In the long term, I'd really like to hear from you guys. SportsCardShow@gmail.com. Send me an email. Sports, SPORTS, card, CARD, and show, SHOW, at gmail.com. Send me any kind of email, any questions you have. I know in the last show, I'm looking for collecting places you go to, websites, different forums, different shopping venues, things like that. Places you go to collect your cards or talk about cards or get more information about cards. And we're going to shout that out, not on today's show. Today I'm going to focus mainly on just some topics. If you're just getting back into collecting, you might not know a lot about. And I've got about 4 or 5 written down here, and we'll see how many I can get to. But basically some things that weren't maybe apparent back when you were collecting, say 5 to 10 years ago, or maybe even longer than that. These are kind of newer things, things you want to keep an eye on, things that you want to be aware of as you go forward in your collection. And that's probably what we're going to be talking about today. I've only got one bit of news, and it's kind of an intriguing piece. It might have flew under the radar of all the Brett Favre and all the training camps for football opening up, but Josh Childress, formerly of the Atlanta Hawks, is looking to sign with a foreign team in Greece, apparently for more money than the Hawks were offering him, and the Hawks were offering him more than $30 million. So this team in Greece is really forking over some big money for Josh Childress, who is a solid NBA player and has had a decent career, but not anything spectacular, obviously. And I think this is kind of going to be a recent trend. It's a recent trend now, and I think it's going to become more prevalent in the NBA especially, but probably throughout other sports as they become more global, is these other leagues, they're popular and over in that country, and in some ways, this is the closest people can get to this kind of high-quality basketball action. So these teams will fork over big money for these NBA players, and it might be in the beginning some fringe NBA players. Kind of, I wouldn't say Josh Childress is a fringe NBA player. I mean, a team offered him $30 million, so he's an above-average NBA talent. But he's choosing to go to a foreign team. So there's going to be a lot of money there. And I think some of these, a lot of second round draft picks, especially foreign players, go overseas. And I saw there was a WNBA player, I think her last name is Hammond, and she actually is not playing in the Olympics this year because she got a large contract from a Russian team to go play basketball over there. And I think we'll see that, especially in basketball. Players might opt to not come to the NBA because the money is bigger in Greece and the pressure might be a little bit less. Or maybe they just, you know, to me, it's probably the money, because it's very hard. If you have the opportunity to sign somewhere else for $10 million more, $15 million more, a really significant amount of money, money. It's very hard to say no to that, even though the NBA is where you're going to build your legacy and have a chance to win an NBA title and really become extremely famous in America and across the world. But they're choosing to go to these other countries, and I don't blame them, you know. And I think it's something that we're going to see more of. More players are going to have the choice of whether or not they want to come to the NBA, maybe be a starter, maybe be kind of a sixth man, seventh man, or go to Greece and be a superstar, basically, because Josh Childress is going to turn into a superstar into the city he's going to play in, and probably throughout Greece. He's going to have quite a reputation out there, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be the highest paid player if he happens to sign this contract. So I thought that was really interesting, and it's something you want to keep an eye on. And in terms of cards, you know, if you had Josh Childress cards, you're probably maybe a little bummed out because he's not going to be in the NBA. But like I said, he's probably going to go to Greece, and if he can play well, and I don't know how his talent will translate into their game, whether or not he can average 30 points or if he's going to be about the same kind of player he was in the NBA. But if he does really well over there, he's going to be a superstar, and people are going to want to collect his cards because there's obviously money over there. If there's a team that can pay a player $30 million, there's obviously people with money over there, and they will collect his cards. So you want to realize that Josh Childress cards might not have a market here in the U.S., but it actually might be over in Greece or over in these foreign countries where he's going to be playing. And you want to keep in mind on that. And that's something, if he does happen to sign, I'd actually probably will take a look on eBay at his prices and see how they go. And maybe if he plays really well over in Greece, are there a lot of international bidders that are getting on eBay and collecting his cards? Or if it's just something that doesn't really happen, we'll see. And it's a very interesting thing going forward. Well, after this very, very, very short break, I am going to bring you some topics that I think if you're new to collecting, you'll want to make sure you know. Just to tease you a little bit, retail versus hobby packs and boxes, those kind of things. Opening packs versus opening boxes and kind of the choices you have there. And we'll have some other issues that either bother me or I will touch on after this break. Hey, what's up? Welcome back. As promised, we're going to talk a little bit about if you're new into collecting, or even if you're collecting somewhat seriously, we're going to touch on some topics that have some gray area and maybe that aren't talked about as much and maybe need some clarification. So we're going to touch on a few of those topics. The first one is retail versus hobby, and realizing there's a difference between what you buy at, say, Walmart and Target and those kind of stores versus what you can buy at your local card shop especially, but also on eBay as well. But obviously on eBay you can find retail and hobby products. And basically what the difference is retail basically describes that it is sold at a retail outlet such as Walmart and such as Target. And the card companies, I think, need to do this because Walmart and Target will buy a bazillion boxes of whatever they're selling. And Upper Deck and Topps and these companies, they don't necessarily want to mass produce their stuff like they did back in the 90s. Obviously, they still do. I mean, there's as many rookie cards now, probably more than back in the 90s of, say, people like Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman, all those classic players. There are probably more Reggie Bush rookies and, you know, Darren McFadden rookies this year and Greg Oden rookies, because there's so many sets and things, subsets and all kinds of inserts that are printed out. There's probably actually more printed today than there were back then. But basically, the card companies, they break it up. You have a retail product, which is only distributed to Walmart and Target. Although, if you get with the right wholesaler, you can get retail and wholesale. It doesn't really matter, these card companies. If it doesn't sell out at the retail level, they'll pass it down to the hobby level, and you can grab boxes. And sometimes they're about the same product, but hobby products tend to deliver you better odds on jerseys. Normally, a retail product out of like 24 packs is only going to deliver one hit in a Walmart pack. And chances are, if you read enough stories, a lot of Walmart packs get searched. And I know they're putting them in little blister packs, which are individual packaging, so it's a little bit tougher to search, but it still goes on quite a bit. I know in my small towns, I know that goes on quite a bit. So you're only looking at one hit per box, whereas in a hobby box of 24 packs, you're looking at maybe 2 to 4 hits or maybe even 5 hits. And when I say hit, I'm talking about a jersey card or an autograph card, not necessarily like a huge value dollar card, but at least, you know, something of not just a piece of cardboard. It either has a jersey or an autograph on it. And that's usually typical in a hobby box. You usually have double the chance of getting a jersey card, or maybe even a little bit better than that. You have a 75% chance of getting a better card. It just kind of depends. And the prices are fairly similar depending on how your hobby shop prices their product. If you go to Walmart, you're paying usually $2.99 or $3.99 plus tax for a product, whereas you can go to a hobby store and get the same pack for probably $5 even. Most card shops factor in sales tax. Some don't, but most that I've been around factor in sales tax, and it's always just, especially if you're a good customer, it's just a flat $5 or a flat $6 for a pack. And if you're getting double the odds or triple the odds, and you know that if it's a up and front dealer and he's not shady, he's not going to be searching the packs, and the packs aren't going to be searched through, so you're actually going to have a better shot at getting a good card. And do card companies weigh, you know, can you get good cards in retail? Yes, you can. I mean, I have a good story. One of my better customers, he buys all over the place, and I don't blame customers. Buy wherever cards you want, you know. And he sometimes when he's at Walmart, he's probably buying other things, and he buys some cards. And he pulled a John Elway out of a Topps Archive baseball. He was in a Yankees uniform, and it's a hand signed. It's not a sticker autograph. And it doesn't have a serial number, but I think it's rumored to be less than 5. And it's probably, I know lots of people really collect that card. It's probably like a $250, $300 card, maybe more. And so you can get good things out of retail. There's articles all the time in Beckett and other stories where you can pull big cards out of retail. But in the same end, there's some cards that really probably do get saved for the hobby boxes, the big one-of-one cuts and some of the baseball products and some of the really super rare cards that are really just kind of one-of-one items throughout the whole year. Probably tend to get put over into the hobby side, and I can't guarantee that, and I don't know if that's actually the case, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. So you want to keep that in mind when you're collecting retail and hobby. And obviously, if you're in a town with only a Target, and I know there, you know, there's places all over, you know, and I'm speaking to a U.S. audience, but obviously I know that we have people listening to us around the globe, and there's all kinds of ways, different ways to get cards, and you just want to be aware, especially on eBay as well. Sometimes sellers don't always outline very clearly what they're selling if it's a retail or hobby product, and you just want to make sure there's usually a difference in the box size. So if there's a picture of the product, you'll be able to tell. Sometimes retail boxes tend to be more square in size, whereas hobby boxes tend to be more rectangle. Obviously, that's not the case across the board. Sometimes they are packaged identically or very similarly, but you want to just make sure you know what you're buying, especially on eBay when you don't have the product right in front of you, whether or not it's a retail or hobby box. And if you do want to go retail, sometimes it's better to go retail because sometimes autographs and jersey cards aren't that big of a hit. It's just like the base rookies that are pretty nice. So it's sometimes okay to go with retail, especially because it might save you a little bit of money on both ends. It just depends on what you're going with. But you just want to be aware there are usually different odds on retail and hobby. And you can get all that information basically on websites and things like that. You'll be able to tell basically through Upper Deck and Tops, they'll usually have a breakdown of what's being offered in the hobby, what's being offered in the retail, and kind of the different odds you'll see in both products. Another topic that when you're first getting back into collecting, you probably often bought packs or boxes back 10 years ago if you were collecting or so. And now those kind of things have changed a little bit. Opening packs is obviously gotten a little bit more expensive. You can still find the $1 and $2 packs, but most packs are in the $5 to $6 range. And obviously they go up from there. There's $1,000 packs now, which are basically a little box of cards. And, you know, you either get one card or 8 cards or something like that, but not very many cards for a lot of money. And that has definitely changed. There's some super premium products, and some are really good. You know, Upper Deck Exquisite is a really super premium product. Ultimate Collection is kind of in that mid-range, although it's $300. That's still a mid-range today, $300-$400 in a mid-range, because it goes up to $1,000 or so now today for a pack of cards. But most of you, I can imagine, are probably going to be collecting in that $5 to $10 range of packs. And there's a lot of packs that deliver some really good value on that level. There's a lot of packs that deliver a hit per pack, either an autograph or a jersey per pack. And those are really cool packs. And I suggest, you know, if you're going to a hobby store that's real reputable, you know, opening those packs and taking shots of those packs is not always a bad idea, because you're guaranteed a little something, even if it's just a buster player and just a kind of an average jersey card. I mean, if you were to pop it on eBay, you're still going to maybe make a dollar or two. So, I mean, in the end, you'll lose a little bit of money. But, you know, if you do hit that big card, there's a better opportunity to hit that two-color patch, that, you know, low serial number autograph patch, or a rookie card out of that set. You know, if you do hit that card, it could be a $100 card, $300 card, $1,000 card, whatever it is, you know, could be a nice thing, you know. But you want to be careful with those $5 to $6 products that don't deliver a hit per pack, which only have maybe 24 packs and four jersey cards and an autograph per box, something in that range. You want to be careful, because a lot of your time, you're not going to be hitting that big card. You're not going to be able to hit that real high dollar card. And a lot of times you're going to be breaking out, especially if you're only buying four or five packs at a time. You're going to be breaking out a lot of the time. So you want to keep that in mind. And if you're willing to gamble, and I don't blame you, go ahead and do it. It's fun. It's a lot of fun to open up packs, because if you can spend 20 and hit that big card, it's a great feeling. But realize a lot of that time, it's like going to the casino. You got to go, a lot of good gamblers say when they go to the casino with, say, $500 in their pocket, they realize that that money's gone. And if they come home with any money, it's like a win, you know. So you want to keep that in mind when you're opening up single packs. It's kind of that same thing. You know, a lot of the times you're going to brick out. If you do hit huge, it's great. And some people may be more lucky than others. It just kind of depends. But you know, you want to take your shots carefully, especially if you're on a tight budget. Opening up boxes is a whole nother thing. We talked on another show about prices and when to buy, and sometimes early is not a bad time to buy, especially if it's a really big rookie class or if it has a really good checklist. You want to maybe buy early, because prices will go up as people open up those boxes. Obviously, there are less to sell, and so prices are naturally going to go up, because people are still going to want to open up those boxes and their packs and maybe hold on to them for future investment. Those kind of things always happen, and you want to just be aware of that today, because it didn't really happen back in the day, because you only had a few products, and you know, a lot of people did buy boxes and hold on to them, but it wasn't really worth it. One, because there was a bazillion of them, but two, because there just wasn't the selection. Once you had the cards and once you had that set put together, why do you want to put 50 sets together? I mean, people did, but today it doesn't really happen. People don't normally hoard big cases and hold on to a lot of things. A lot of it gets moved and opened up and things like that, because there's a lot of good things in the cards today, because there's a lot of one-of-one hits and a lot of redemption cards that expire. And if you happen to hold on to that box for a certain amount of time and that redemption expires, I mean, you're really left with nothing. So cards get sold quickly today, and you want to keep in mind there's a lot of product that comes out throughout the year. You know, if you spend $100 on a box now, and 3 months from now, there's, you know, 10 more, 50 more products out, that box may not be $100. It might be $80 or $75. You could have the same box for the same, you know, less money and have probably a decent shot at getting a good card. So keep that in mind. Another thing I want to touch on, and this is kind of something that I have my own opinions on, and it's something that gets talked about a lot, but it's basically quote-unquote true rookies. And there's a lot of different ways I can go with this, but basically the first one I want to touch on is parallels. And basically, let's just take a set like Topps Chrome, and you have the base rookies, which you can pull out of the packs, and they have a number of, like, say, 389 or number 25. And it's the regular card in the set, and if you were to put together the set, that card would be right in there with the Drew Bledsoe when he played, but Tony Romo's and the Brett Favre's and the, you know, players that are playing today. It all goes in line with that base set. That's a quote unquote true rookies, and this is all according to Beckett, who happens to be the leader in pricing, and they do a decent job. And I think Beckett has done a better job recently. Their magazine at least is somewhat entertaining, and you can go through it and learn a lot about cards. But their pricing structure and what they call true rookies to me kind of bothers me a little bit, you know, because in Topps Chrome you have refractors that sometimes are serial numbered and sometimes not. It just kind of depends on how they do it. They have black border refractors and all kinds of other refractors. And those, according to Beckett, aren't quote unquote true rookies because you already have the base rookie in that set, and then you have a parallel that's, you know, it's got a shiny gloss on it and serial numbered out of 500, say. And that happens throughout every set. There's purple, gold, green, yellow, magenta, all kinds of parallels. And those aren't considered true rookies. They might be worth more than just say the base card's worth 10 and the refractor's worth two times more. So it might be worth more, but Beckett doesn't call it a true rookie, and that bothers me because, you know, if you just say go back 50 years to say maybe a Mickey Mantle rookie, and I could be mistaken, but I think it was 1956 Topps is like the Mantle rookie or one of the best Mantle cards. Say back in those days, now I know they didn't, but say back in those days they had a parallel of that card. Say it was more glossy, or say it was serial numbered in those days to 100 or 200. To me, if you had that card today, I don't give a crap what Beckett says. If that's not a true rookie, that's the best Mickey Mantle card you could ever have. Because if you have that card and it's in real good condition, obviously you'd want the quote-unquote base rookie, but boy, if I had some money, I'd want that one that was low serial numbered. That card would be worth a bazillion dollars today. So keep that in mind. You know, you're collecting today, but if you're in it for the long haul, you're looking 10, 20, 30 years, 40 years, depending on how old you are down the line. You know, a LeBron James, you know, Topps Chrome refractor, you know, black border out of, you know, 50. To me, I'd rather have that card than the base card any day of the freaking week. So I don't care what Beckett says, and they are worth more. So keep that in mind. Just because Beckett says it's not a true rookie, who cares? Freaking buy the card. And that's a better card to have than the base card. The base card is not to hate on the base card, but if it's lower serial number and it's a little bit harder to get, to me, that's a better card. And that will stand over the test of time. That card will have better value because less people will have that card. And if it's a truly great player, a lot of people will want that card. So, you know, I wouldn't pay attention to that on that one. Another thing that's really been confusing in baseball the last couple of years is baseball, MLB themselves mandated, they wanted to clear up the rookies because for a long time, and it was actually really cool, Bowman and some of these other products put out cards when these guys were drafted right out of high school, or, you know, even before that, when they were just signed out of, you know, the Dominican Republic or something like that. They would put out these cards, you know, 5 years before these guys have a shot in the big leagues. And so it often, when a guy broke through, you had to go back 4 or 5 years. And it was actually pretty cool because if you had unopened boxes of that product, those boxes skyrocketed, and if you had those cards, you could have, bought a bunch of them over that course of that 4 or 5 years for probably not that much money, and then once they hit, you would have had a bunch of them, and you would have scored in big. But basically, baseball mandated that in order to have a card, you have to play in the major leagues. You have to, I don't know the rules, and you can do the research, it's kind of complicated, but you basically have to spend some time in the major leagues, and your card now gets designated with a rookie logo. It has this own little diamond rookie logo. I'm sure you've seen it by now, but that's kind of caused some confusion. It's not really going to be a problem in about 10 years, but it has caused some confusion for guys that were drafted in 2005 and 6 and maybe even before that. Now they're making their way onto the big leagues for the first time, but Bowman Chrome has already put out their cards, or Topps, you know, update has already had a card of his. And so now in the Beckett, you'll notice that some rookies have parentheses around the rookie. It'll say rookie and then it'll have parentheses around it. That basically means that's a rookie card because it has the rookie logo and they're going to put it in the Beckett as that. But it means that they have cards listed before that. It means they have a Bowman Chrome or something like that before that year. If it's 2008, they have a 2007 or beyond or before that rookie card. So you want to keep that in mind. You know, you'll have a rookie card today, but it means that they might have rookies before that. And it doesn't always translate, because I've seen cards, you know, Bowman still puts out prospect rookie cards. You know, I remember seeing Fernando Martinez of the Mets. One of our customers pulled his rookie card, and he's not in the big leagues, but he pulled an autographed rookie card of him. So there is some gray area, and I know there's a TriStar product that comes out either earlier in the year or throughout the year that covers some of these minor league prospects. So that's all a real touchy gray area, and you have to keep that in mind as you're collecting. And that's why I say you have to do your research, because it really changes from year to year. I can tell you, go out and buy Bowman Chrome autographs. Those are going to be the most valuable ones. But it may not necessarily be the case. Is, you know, there's some Topps Chrome updates that are real nice, and there's some other cards that come out that are actually pretty nice. So you want to keep an eye on all that. And, you know, Beckett is its own opinion, and Beckett has been around for a long time, and they have a real reputation. I really respect their magazine. I think they do a real good service for the hobby. However, you got to keep in mind, things change real quickly. There's, you know, networks on TV, and there's all kinds of things that people thought that were going to be around forever that aren't around today, that have changed. You know, times change. And so will Beckett be the leader and kind of the standard in pricing and kind of this information? Maybe, maybe not. It'll really be up to collectors to decide, and only time will tell. So you'll have to keep all that in mind. You know, that's about it I want to touch on today. I have some other topics that we'll probably talk about as time goes on. My next show, if I get enough emails, Sports Card Show, SportsCardShow at gmail.com. SportsCardShow@gmail.com. Tell me where you collect your cards, where you talk about your cards, where you find your news and information. Things on YouTube. My boy Drake shouted me out YouTube, and I've been checking it out more. I've got some ideas myself, but tell me the collectors that you check out recently, or maybe some awesome box breaks that you've seen on YouTube. Hook me up with some emails. Send me some ideas. I'll shout them out on the next show. We'll talk about all that stuff. But I've gone on long enough. After this break, I'm going to shout out a website. I don't have a baseball prospect or anything like that for you today. I've got a website. Again, I don't know anybody from this website. They don't pay me a dime. In fact, I don't necessarily agree with everything this website has done, but it's actually a pretty cool website, and it's for a different kind of collector, and we'll talk about that after this. Thanks for coming back. And as promised, I'm going to go over a website, and we'll do this whenever I don't have a prospect or something like that to shout out to you guys. I'm going to shout out kind of an unbiased opinion about a website that maybe some of you have used and maybe some of you haven't. It's a fairly popular website. I've actually been a part of it for, I think, about 7 or 8 years now. I think almost since the beginning, because I remember when they were running ads that they were about to start this site. I joined before they kind of started it, and once they had cards on there, I started participating a little bit more. And it's basically called The Pit, thepit.com, and I'm sure many of you heard about it. It was once owned by Topps, and now it's owned by another company. But they've done a decent job since it's under new ownership. It's about the same website. Basically, why I said this was for a different kind of collector was because you can take delivery of your cards on this site, but it's better if you don't. And how the site works is they have a selection of cards. Most of them, I would say this site tends to be baseball heavy. It has a lot of baseball rookies and a lot of Bowman Chrome rookies. And so if you're into baseball, I think you'll want to check this site out. And it has a little bit of basketball and a little bit of football, but nothing. Those cards don't go up and down quite as quickly. And oftentimes the best football rookies are kind of the super premium rookies. And in order for this site to work, they kind of need to have at least 50 to 100 copies on hand. So it tends to work better for, you know, your common Bowman Chrome baseball rookies and cards like that. Although there's quite a bit of selection. There's graded cards on here too. And basically what it is, it kind of works like the stock market. You can buy and sell cards without ever taking delivery of the cards themselves. And that makes it easy because you don't have to worry about having the cards on hand. You don't have to worry about them getting damaged. And it's really easy to sell because if you're always around the internet and say you're on vacation and you want to sell this card when it gets to, you know, double your investment, you can easily do that on this site. You can either do what in the stock market is called a program trade. Say you buy the card for $10. Say it's just like, you know, like they have Ken Griffey Jr. rookies on here, and say it's just like your average Ken Griffey Jr. tops traded. I see on here they have a PSA 10 and it looks like you can get it for about $13. And let's say you did get it for $13 and you wanted to sell it when that card reached $18, you wanted to sell it for sure. Well, you could put that in to the system and, you know, put in the price $18. And if you had two or three of them, you can specify whether or not you want to sell more than one of the cards. It's very, you know, I encourage you to check it out. Like I said, it's not for every collector. I know a lot of collectors that want to have the cards in-house. They want to be able to organize them and touch them and feel them. And this card, this site doesn't give you that chance. But it is for the collector that may not want to take on all the cards or may already have a large collection and wants to start something on the internet. I encourage you to do so. It's not a bad site. There's not every card. There's certainly not every player on here. But the prices on here are typical, you know, eBay prices because the site has grown enough to where enough serious card collectors know they can come to the site and pick up a guy, say he has a real hot opening week or he just gets to the big leagues or the NFL and he starts playing well. They know they can come to this site and pick up a decent quantity of rookies for about the same price on eBay. And the way the site makes money is they basically charge commission. It's very much run like the stock market. Every trade, you're charged a certain commission. It's really not that bad of a commission, considering if you were to sell the card on eBay, you're looking at insertion fees, you're looking at final value fees, you're probably looking at PayPal fees. And all those things, you know, they obviously cost a little bit of money. And for most things on eBay, it's like 12 to 15% of your final price you're looking to knock off in fees. So this site probably isn't quite that high, although I haven't made a trade in about a month or two, so I can't say I know the commissions offhand, but it's really not too expensive compared to other avenues of selling. So it's not a bad way to go. You can also submit your card if you have a large collection, especially if you have some of these Bowman Chrome rookies. If you have like a 30 lot or a 40 lot and you know you don't really feel like maybe doing much with them, but selling them when they're hot, it's not a bad place. You can actually submit your cards to them. They're based out of Southern California. You mail them your cards, and in a few days, it shows up in your account. And you end up, once you sign up, you have your own account, and it lists all your cards, and it kind of tracks your performance in terms of gains and losses. And if you know a little bit about the stock market, it'll help you on this site because instead of just outright bidding and outright purchase prices, there's bid and ask prices, and what a bid price is what you're willing to pay for the card. And an ask price is basically like a buy it now. You can actually buy that card at that price at that time. So like this Ken Griffey Jr., this 89 tops traded PSA 10, the bid is $12.10 and the ask is $13.35. So it basically means someone's willing to pay $12.10 right now and someone's willing to sell it for $13.35. So there's a little bit of a gap there, and it's usually only a dollar or two or a little bit more depending on the value of the card. And sometimes it's only like 10 or 15 cents. But it's some that actually adds up because a lot of people buy in quantity on here. They're buying in 5 to 10 to 20 or more of one card. So a 5 to 10 cent difference over 20 cards, it actually is quite a bit of money. And plus, keep in mind that sports cards don't jump up and down in value very often, especially established players like Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, he's already ran through his career almost, and everybody knows, you know, Ken Griffey's story, and you know, his numbers are still really good, but a lot of people knew that they probably could have been better if he stayed healthy. So someone like Griffey, you know, if you happen to gamble and pay a dollar or two more for 5 to 10 cards, it might take you a little bit longer to recoup on that investment, and you may not be able to recoup on that at all. Whereas if you got it for 50 cents less or 75 cents less, you might be able to break even on your sell, or you might be able to make a little bit of money. It just kind of depends. And again, like I said earlier, I don't necessarily agree with everything on this site. It used to be that you could send in any graded card and they would list it on the site, and whether they had one or two or 20 of the copies of the cards, you were able to send in any graded card that you wanted to, for the most part. But they did away with that, and now it's really just their own thing, and it's their own cards that they put forth. And they try to they call them IPOs, initial public offerings, basically stemming from stock again. But they offer, you know, 5 to 10 cards every month or so. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. So don't go there and expect to see the new hot player all the time. A lot of the times it's kind of these established stars and guys that have already kind of broken through make their way onto the site. And that's not to say this site might change and it might grow. Who knows? I've seen it change quite a bit. I used to get phone calls personally from customer service, and now I haven't heard from them. And, you know, since this other company bought them from Topps, it's definitely... I don't know, if it's basically the same site, and I think they've just added their own logos, and it really hasn't grown as much as I thought it would have in about 5 to 7 years, but it's still not a bad site, and it's cool for people like me. I don't necessarily want to have all the cards on hand. I don't necessarily want to have to bother scanning it and listing it and putting it on eBay. All that takes time, and all that takes effort and things like that, and if you know me, time and effort are two things that... I don't normally have a lot of, especially effort, but, you know, so check out this site if you haven't already, thepit.com. And again, it's an unbiased endorsement. If they want to send some money my way, feel free. You can reach me at sportscardshow@gmail.com, and you can make all checks out to Colin Tedards. I'll accept any amount of money they want to send me. So hook it up. But every week, I'll either shoot you a baseball prospect, mainly a baseball prospect, because I follow those prospects a little bit closer than football and basketball. But as football season comes around and basketball season rolls around, we might throw a few more of those ways. But if I don't got one of those, I'm going to shout you out a website that you should check out. And, you know, that is about it today. Thanks again for tuning in. Hope you all have a good week and weekend. Good luck with your collections. Be careful on eBay. We're going to have a show, a future show, on fake patches and fake jersey cards on eBay. Because right now, I can guarantee you there's over 100, maybe even more than that, fake patches on eBay that are selling for money. People buy, like, probably a fake jersey and cut the patches off that and carefully glue it or paste it into these cards. And they fool people every day. I see it, and it's kind of sad. But I want you to be aware of it. I don't want you to be fooled. That'll be a future show. In the meantime, don't work too hard. Send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. I've already spelt it for you plenty of times. Send it to me now. Stop what you're doing. Send me an email. Be the next one to contact me. I'll talk to you guys later. Peace out.